Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hello, everybody, and welcome back to the Triple Jump Podcast. It's a video game podcast. My name is Ben.
My name is Peter.
And my name is Ashton, and I'm in my house.
She's on the little screen there.
Help me, I've been trapped in this box.
Our Leicester correspondent coming in live.
There she is.
There she is.
We are still waiting for Ashton to secure accommodation. And in the meantime, this will be sort of our podcast setup going forwards. If you're listening to the audio version, Peter and I are in the podcast studio. We are back in the office now. We've been working all week from the office. It's been a bit surreal and strange, but it's, on the whole, been quite lovely to be back. You know what's more lovely, though, Peter?
What's that?
Ashton's been on holiday, so we don't even have to deal with her.
Oh, yeah. Thank God. I regret hiring her. No, I don't. I really don't.
God. Just went for the jugular. How was your holiday, Ashton?
It was really nice, but now I'm sad. No, it was lovely. We went to Edinburgh and had a lovely couple of sunny days. We got like the end of the heat wave, so it wasn't too hot. It was a nice temperature.
Nice.
And it only rained on the last day we were there, but that's the day we were getting the train back, so it wasn't so bad.
It's
my partner was
Scotland.
Praying for a storm that was meant to come on, like, I think Tuesday night, and it just never came. It was like, it'll be here at 4:30. Now it's 7:30. Now it's 10:30. Now it's never coming. So he was kind of disappointed that he didn't get to see a thunderstorm. But
So it was for the spectacle of the thunderstorm, not the sort of cooling effect of the aftermath.
No, so, but it was lovely. I had a very nice time. Disappointed to hear that you didn't miss me, but.
No, of course we missed you.
Of course we did.
We had to busy ourselves with non-Ashton things, which were nowhere near as fun, like getting the streaming setup sorted and stuff. But by the time that you join us in the office, it should hopefully be all ready to go.
It looks good. I like it.
It's shaping up nicely.
Nice. Yeah.
It's shaping up very nicely. Mm. And at the time of recording tonight, we'll be doing our first joint stream as a trio as well, which is very exciting.
Yes.
So make sure you go to the VODs channel, more on that later, to catch up on our shenanigans in the Tokyo Olympics video game, which was, I imagine, really silly.
Yes, probably.
Now, before we go any further, Ashton, we have to cover the sponsor for this week's podcast. It's a real video game sponsor. It exists, and they have given us money, and that is a fact.
Wow.
And I have the ad read right here.
Please read it.
I flipping will.
Do it.
We are sponsored. It's not one of the best sponsors.
It's not the best.
It's not the best sponsor.
Don't be rude about our real sponsor.
Sorry,
our real company.
I've not even read it out yet.
We are sponsored by the brand new video game that people are very excited about, Persona Sticks.
Persona Sticks.
Persona Sticks.
Right. What does that entail?
The subtitle says, "Now even your dog can get in on the fun."
Oh, okay.
That's what it says. So Persona Sticks, that's it, weirdly. It just says the title and a little subheading.
And just now even your dog can get involved.
And now even your dog can get in on the fun.
Wow. That was it. I don't know what you're talking about. That was a really good one.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah. Well, I'm really glad that that's real.
It's definitely real. Moving on. No, actually, it's pretend. It's not a real sponsor. I'm really sorry.
It sounded just so real. It really did.
I've lied to you and bamboozled you all.
Yeah.
Ha, ha, ha.
Hoodwinked.
I'm befuddled.
Absolutely. No, of course, we are actually sponsored by our very real sponsor. What am I saying? Our patrons over at patreon.com/teamtriplejump, where for as little as $1 per month, you can support us and the podcast and submit questions to the podcast. All the questions we answer on the podcast are from our patrons, patreon.com/teamtriplejump. Now, Peter, we're about to get to the first question.
Yeah.
But there's a little something else that we got to do as well.
There is a little something else that we got to do as well. Another little stream that helps support the podcast, a little revenue stream. Why don't you guys check out triplejump.gg?
Hello, everyone. As well as our extremely real and totally not fictitious in any way sponsor, we're officially partnered with PlayStation, Xbox, and Nintendo to sell their codes through our own website, triplejump.gg.
Here you can get everything from topping up your digital wallet to PlayStation Plus, Xbox Live Gold, Xbox Game Pass, and Nintendo Switch Online subscriptions, as well as Minecraft mine coins. Mine coins, they'll be your coins any minute.
Nice one, Peter.
Yeah, thanks very much.
It's 100% legitimate, directly supports us, and provides you with the delightful digital currencies you're going to buy anyway. Visit triplejump.gg to browse our full stock.
Triplejump.gg. This is a real sponsor.
Wonderful. Well, it's time for question one. This is from Dan Scott, who may or may not be related to Barry Scott of Silent Bang fame. I can't confirm or deny.
He can't not be, right?
Well, yeah, I guess not. Hello, Ben and Peter and Ashton.
Hello.
You got a wave there.
There she is.
The Great Ace Attorney Chronicles released this week, which is exciting for Ace Attorney fans, as the two games have been out in Japan for several years already, with it receiving high praise when it released over there in 2015. Now Western audiences are finally getting to play it. And so my question to you is, have you ever found yourself in a position where you've wanted to purchase a game that only released outside of Europe? And what are your opinions of region locking overall? Much love to you all.
Thank you, Dan. Brother of Barry.
Yes.
Relative of Barry.
I haven't had this in terms of the game itself only releasing in a certain region. But what I did have, which kind of disappointed me at the time, was that when the Reignited trilogy released, the Spyro Reignited trilogy, there was a really swish, beautiful looking steel case version available in, I think it was Australia, and some people were like buying them online and having them shipped over at a silly amount of money, and I thought about getting it, because obviously at the time that was probably one of my most anticipated game releases, you know, certainly of that year, if not that decade, really. So I thought, you know, what better way to mark the occasion and keep a memento than getting a really nice, pretty version of it.
Yeah.
It never released in the UK as a special edition box, and I'm sure they're available online if I really wanted to buy one. But, you know, and the other thing that would be a shame about that is that if I bought the Australian version, is there still region locking on consoles in terms of if you buy like an Australian copy of a PS4 game, is that still an issue? Like, can you run it?
I don't think so. I think after the
Blu-ray
360
era.
Yeah, the Blu-ray era, certainly region locking was done,
because certainly with Blu-ray films it's much less of an issue now, so yeah. That would make sense, but
yeah,
I did wonder that as well. Like, I might pay for this and not even be able to actually play the game. I might have to just put my UK disc into the Australian box.
Be real though, Peter, you were just buying the very shiny case.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
You didn't need to.
No.
You didn't need it again. How many copies of it do you have? Is it just digital?
I bought a digital copy so I could play it on day one.
Yeah.
I also, I think, bought a physical so I could just have it on my shelf. Mm-hmm. And then also someone sent in a copy that was signed by all the QA team, which I've also got.
Oh, that's amazing.
So I have three copies of it. Yeah. And then I could potentially also one day buy the Australian version just for a nice box. But yeah, love that game. That's me. Yeah, Spyro itself wasn't only released in Australia, of course.
We're bending the rules a bit.
But how about Ashton?
I don't really have a game that was kind of region locked or that was released not where I could acquire it, in terms of like that being the reason I couldn't get a game. But to completely not answer your question and just say what I want to say instead, I meant kind of like, consoles and like the ability to play a game. So like I really wanted to play Animal Crossing when it first came out, like the new one on the Switch, but obviously it was really hard to get a Switch at the time because it was practically impossible, much like with the PlayStation 5 and Xbox now. So yeah, I had to wait for that, which was kind of annoying, but that's, you know, not because it was only available in other countries, because everyone else also wanted a Switch. But for the most part, when it comes to like other consoles and games that you can't play because they're only released on a certain console, at this point, it's kind of not too much of an issue anymore, because if I can't get it on PlayStation or Steam because it's an Xbox exclusive, it's on Xbox Game Pass, so I can just play it there. And vice versa with, if I can't play it on Xbox or PlayStation, I'll just get it on Steam. It's probably fine. Obviously, there isn't really one of those for Nintendo, but if you've got a Switch, you can kind of access most of it. It's still quite pricey for most Switch games, but you can access most of it on the like digital storefront as well. But yeah, I don't really have one for the region thing, but that's an answer to a different question you didn't ask, and I hope you enjoyed it anyway.
That's okay. We've so much to learn about you, Ashton. Like we get certain questions in for the podcast where we're like, oh, we've kind of done that one already, you know, weeks and weeks and weeks ago, months ago.
Yeah.
But all these questions and all this information is new about you, Ashton. So it's still useful to know.
Yeah. Good. Certainly. Good. I'm glad.
I have several examples. Because good. I pick the questions.
You can make up for the rest of us.
I know my answers. So obviously, Persona 5 was a big one. That released in Japan, I can't remember the date, but in the rest of the world, it didn't come out for almost a year. And I remember we were at What Culture at the time, and I know from... and this is still a practice that continues now. We have friends in various... positions at magazines and websites and stuff, and particularly with Japanese games that are being localized, they're localized way in advance of their release dates, like we're talking months.
Yeah.
And I ended up with a copy of Persona 5 while we were at What Culture, like 2-3 months before it released in the West, which was bonkers. It was ready to go. And that was amazing. So I didn't really have to wait, but I kind of did. Persona 5 Strikers was another one that took ages to be localized. I don't think, to address Dan's question at the end about region locking overall,
yeah,
I don't really think region locking exists in the same way that it once did. I think it's more of a localization issue and sort of waiting for these games to be ready. And if they're, if the English language version and the Japanese language version, for example, are developed concurrently, then... everyone has to wait a lot longer. Probably the cost to make it goes up and the release dates get pushed, and the Japanese version may be ready 6 months before the Western one, but Japanese players have to wait 6 months. And is that fair? I don't know. It's all a bit complicated.
Well, and sometimes it's also a projected popularity issue. Like the publisher might say, this game's not going to sell if we sell it to Europeans or Americans. It's going to sell well in Japan, or vice versa. You know, you might have a more Western-centric game, and sometimes they're just not released in the Japanese region. Again, it's less of an issue now, but that certainly has been a reason or an excuse that this has been done in the past.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
So that might be why they're focusing. Another one is Africa. Have you heard of Africa, the continent? Are you familiar with Africa, the continent?
The rains I've heard down of it, in Africa.
Yeah.
By Toto. There was
exactly. That's the one from the GTA soundtrack. There was a game called Africa for PS3, and it was a wildlife photography game.
Oh.
And it was in the early days of the PS3. And I was like, that, and I read about it in a magazine and thought, that sounds weird and amazing, and I would love to play that. And I imported it from Asia, where it happened to have an English language version if you popped it in a PS3 where the language was set to English. And I hated it. And it took ages to arrive, and I spent loads of money on it. But Africa is one that I had to, that was actually region locked in the sense that I don't think, I may be wrong, but I don't think it came out in the West.
I mean, I've never heard of it. Not that I necessarily would have done.
I think it was Africa spelt with a K as well.
Oh, wow. That's pretty edgy.
Yeah, I don't know. But anyway, there's a few examples of games that I've sort of had to wait for over the years. But thank you, Dan, for the question.
For your question.
Should we move on to another section? How do you feel about moving on to another section, Ashton?
I feel absolutely ecstatic to do so. Is it one we've never done before?
It might just be.
Oh, baby.
Looks like it.
What is it?
It's what we play in, Tyler.
It's what we play in.
It's what we play in time. Time for what we play in. Peter, what have we, brackets you, been playing?
I flipping did it. I'm not going to bang the table because it'll echo through
more
the
Halo.
Microphone. Yeah, I've played more Halo. I have played a little bit, only a little bit, admittedly, of Ratchet & Clank because I did get distracted by a different game or a different series, I should say. At long last, you know, Ashton talked about console locking rather than region locking or platform locking of games. Finally, the exclusivity deal on Orcs Must Die 3.
Oh, it's finally ended.
It's finally over.
You're a huge fan of Orcs Must Die.
I love Orcs Must Die. It's so underrated. And I'm going to play it on stream. But it was a Stadia exclusive from the launch of Stadia. And then Stadia went really well.
Yeah,
and
I hope you all enjoyed that Stadia enthusiast.
And so they did say from the very beginning that it would eventually come to Steam. It wasn't a permanent Stadia exclusive, but it was a timed exclusive.
Yeah.
It came out on, I believe, the 23rd or something like that of July. So that's now available. I've not actually been playing Orcs Must Die 3. I have played Orcs Must Die 1 because when Orcs Must Die 3 came out, I was thinking I should play that on stream. And I thought, will I be able to do that? Like live on the internet, some games don't translate so well to streaming, we find. So I have kind of been doing a bit of a recce, a bit of a recon.
Oh, yeah. And then it sucked you in, did
mission.
It?
And yeah, that's the thing. So I won't talk too much about it.
I'm just testing it, Mum. I'm just testing it.
Exactly. Well, I won't talk too much about it right now because it also kind of plays into my answer to question two. So we'll hear more about that in a minute. But I did also get back to Ratchet & Clank. For those who don't, perhaps listen to the podcast regularly. Number one, what the flip are you doing?
What are you doing, miss?
But number two, that's the PS4 kind of remake, reimagining of the
movie
first game.
Sort of.
Tied in with the movie because I want to play through that first before I move on to Rift Apart. So,
Peter, I truly feel like you are destined to never finish Ratchet & Clank.
Potentially, yeah.
We're still going to be talking about this next year.
We will. Yeah. Next week, I'll be like, I've stopped playing Orcs Must Die 1. I'm now on Orcs Must Die 3. Yeah. And I've not played any more Ratchet & Clank.
In the meantime, they added some DLC. And
yeah.
Been...
Ratchet & Clank Rift Apart 2 is out now.
Yes.
So that's what I've been up to. Bit of Ratchet at long last and a fair bit of Orcs Must Die 1.
Mm-hmm.
Ashton,
what have you been playing?
So obviously I was away on holiday, so I haven't played much, but we did have 2 5-hour train journeys there and back.
Oof.
So I did try and take the Switch with me to play a couple games on. I played mainly Scribblenaut Showdown, which is the kind of like party game version of Scribblenauts. We played that on the train, and it's actually pretty good. I really enjoyed it. It's got a couple of modes, like a versus mode, a showdown mode, and then like a sandbox, which is kind of like the regular Scribblenauts, kind of wander around an area and solve puzzles and get star rights. But yeah, I really enjoyed that. And it was kind of awkward to do like the motion controls on the train.
Yeah.
A couple of them were a little bit like kind of maybe a bit questionable if you don't really know the context of what's going on. But yeah, we really enjoyed it. And I tried to play a little bit of Mario Sunshine yesterday because I got the, I can't remember what the game is, what the actual game's called.
The
one that's got like 64,
The
pack, 64 Sunshine and Galaxy. And I got a little bit frustrated with Sunshine. kind of maybe called Mario the C word a couple of times.
Whoa.
On a train?
A cretin?
On a train, yeah. Just
you
really
can't
quietly.
Call him a cretin?
I said, Mario, I hate you. And then I called him, yeah. But yeah, I think I might try and go back to playing. I really enjoyed Odyssey, but I just couldn't get into Sunshine. The camera was really driving me up the wall, so... Yeah,
that's one that has a real cult following, that one, because I think it was maybe not reviewed as well as a lot of... I know our very own James Jenkins was a big Super Mario Sunshine.
My friend had it at school, and I used to watch him play it as well. Yeah.
People love that one. They really like
it. It's quite charming, like all the 3D Mario games are. The art style, it's very pretty. But,
So I might try and go back to that, maybe on like my telly and see if I play like if I like it more when it's on a bigger screen and I'm not on a train for 5 hours. But yeah, so I played that this week. That's about it, really.
Nice. Lovely. Yeah. Lovely. Well,
Ben Potter.
That's me. I have played Pokemon Crystal.
Oh. Mm.
One of my favorite Pokemon games. I did mention recently, I think on the podcast, that I sent away my cartridge to a specialist to get the save battery replaced so that I can actually save the game, because Pokemon Crystal is the Pokemon game that I put the most amount of hours into a single save in. It was like 350 hours over the course of maybe a decade. And I had about 230 out of 250, 251 Pokemon. Oh. And then the save battery died and I started up. And it was like, would you like to start a new game? And I'm like, no, actually,
no,
I really wouldn't like to start a new game. Thank you. So I'm diving back in. It's been ages since I've played Pokemon Crystal or Gold or Silver. The last time I experienced anything to do with this game was when Heart Gold came out for the DS in, I want to say, 2009, maybe, with a little Pokewalker. Yeah. Which is now weirdly, apparently, very valuable.
Oh.
And I've still got mine. And I once attached it to the bike rack of the family car when we went on holiday to France.
Wow.
And so it shook so much that the counter reset. It did a full loop of the maximum amount of steps.
Oh.
And I think I had a Haunter in there, like the Pokemon. And rather than, you know, an actual ghost.
An actual ghost on the bike rack.
You know, the Pokemon Haunter. And it was just like it'd been on the on the roids, on the protein. It was just the henchest.
Hencher rather than Haunter.
Just this giant muscular spooky boy. But yeah, I haven't played it in flipping ages. I'm really taking my time and trying to enjoy it. Playing it like all the music is so nostalgic and wonderful. Because when I've returned to Pokemon games over the years, it's nearly always been the original three, you know, red, blue, or yellow. So going back to Crystal's been lovely. I've got a Spinarak called Spidey. I've got a Quilava called Toasty. I've got an Onix called Rocky.
Loving all these just made up Pokemon that you're pulling out of nowhere.
Yeah,
that definitely don't exist.
Spinarak.
Yeah. Yes, but why are you just inventing stuff on the spot?
I've got a
spork.
They're real. I promise they're real. I do.
Spork.
I have a Ghastly called Hunter.
I know that one. Onix.
I know an Onix. Yeah.
Yeah.
Onix is real. And I have a, what's it called? It is a, what's the little wet one?
A Spookums.
Not the cuddly woobies.
A blubbly wobbly.
What's he called? A Poliwag.
Poliwag.
I've got a Poliwag called Wet Boy, obviously.
It's
Wet
Course.
Boy. So I'm sort of leveling them up all equally. I'm loving it. I'm having a great time playing it in bed. My Game Boy Advance SP. Pulled out my charger. That for some reason is one of those ones, you know, when you lose a charger for an old system and what you find is one from like the Essential Starter Pack.
Yeah.
And it's like USB on one end and it splits into like five different Nintendo chargers on the other end. So yeah, it's great. I'm really enjoying playing it. And it's a lovely way to end the day.
With your Poliwags.
With my Poliwags.
The wives and girlfriends of the Polystars in sports. Yeah.
Polyamorous wags.
Yes.
So there we are. That's what I've been playing. Let's move on to question two, Ashton.
Ah, yes. So this is asked by Juliet. Oh, gosh. You've asked me to read. Now I'm already stressed out. Juliet Stevenson and Samuel Benson. I mean, you asked kind of very similar questions. So Ben just kind of smashed you together. That's
smashed
it.
You.
Smashed you together. Yeah. Mm. Hello, Ben, Peter, and Ashton. Hope you are doing well. Are you doing well, boys?
Yeah, doing all right.
Yeah, I'm actually
doing fine.
Good, good. After finding Peggle Deluxe for 85 English pence on Steam recently, subsequent loss of productivity got me thinking about similar games that are simple yet devilishly addictive. What are your favourite turn your brain off and lose an afternoon games?
Oh, boy.
Oh, boy.
Well,
I played a lot of I guess it was probably Peggle 1, right? Not Peggle 2. It might have been Peggle 2.
Yeah, I'm surprised. I'm sort of sad that Juliet doesn't in word form do the Peggle 2.
Peggle
like the big jump on the stage.
I played a lot of Peggle something at university, which is, you know, the worst time to find a simple yet addictive game.
Yes, that's where mine comes from too.
Right, yeah. And I remember I lived with a group of guys. This was in the first year where you just get shoved into a flat with a mystery group.
Yeah.
Into student halls, not a flat really. I remember one day my door was wedged open and the guy who lived across the corridor from me walked past and saw that I was playing Peggle. And when he saw that I was playing Peggle, he just walked past and went, haggle like that. I was like, whoa.
The derision.
Jeez, yeah.
You casual.
I know. Why am I not playing Skyrim or
Peggle,
something?
I've never played Peggle, but the one thing I know about it is Peggle. That it's very addictive, very good,
yeah.
and deeply loved. Mm-hmm. The scorn leveled by that boy.
I know, the elitist. Boy.
Goodness. I hope he went back to his room to, like, I don't know, do some hardcore coding or something. I don't know, yeah. I don't know what you would do.
No, I know. So I played a lot of that. It is a very addictive game, but it's also quite pretty as well, Peggle. Hmm. Not so much just the glowing pegs, but all the stuff around it. Like you.
Like the ghoul.
The what, sorry?
You got the glowing pegs.
The pegs and the ghouls.
And the ghouls.
Yeah, the peg ghouls.
Yeah.
They live by the sea and they steal chips.
Oh, God.
So you meet various mentors as you move through the game who are sort of, I mean, they're a bit sickly sweet, but they're like little cutesy. There's like a unicorn and like a little, I don't know what, I don't remember anymore, like a little squirrel and stuff like that. And they all have a different power that they give you. So you can do like explosive pegs or like, you know, extra balls and things like that. So all of those assets are very pretty and stuff. It's a lovely game. And then one that sort of qualifies, and I kind of included it because I mentioned it in what we're playing today, Orcs Must Die. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's not so simple in the same sense as it's not a sort of arcadey puzzler game or anything like that. It's not your Fruit Ninjas, for example.
Right.
But it is also a relatively straightforward game. You just pop some traps down and then mash the shoot button and shoot lots and lots of waves of enemies. It's not a complex narrative. There aren't a whole lot of cutscenes.
Tug on your heartstrings.
Yeah, and you don't even, you know, you're not navigating through levels that much. You're mostly just standing by the door that you're defending. So it's relatively speaking, it's a fairly simple game. And yeah, that is a series that I have plugged or sank so many hours into, both one and two. Especially Orcs Must Die 2 has a system where, well, in the first game, as you move through each level, you just unlock a new kind of trap. It just gives it to you. Mm-hmm. This is your new trap. In the second game, you earn skulls instead of stars. You get like a skull rating, like 5 skulls or whatever.
Okay.
And you spend those on new traps. And that is very, very easy to get kind of wrapped up in, and you want to go back and get a 5 skull rating on every single mission so that you can unlock everything in the spell book. And there are lots of things to unlock that you'll probably never use, and lots of costumes, and it's easy to get lost in that. So those are my two.
Nice.
Ashton.
Cool. So we know that I like a good mobile game.
And some bad ones too.
Got her. It's like the one thing that I think everyone's taken away from the videos is just that I really like bad mobile games. When I was at uni, I found this one that was essentially just like a pixel color by numbers that you could do on your phone. And I spent a lot of time doing that game. And my boyfriend used to say that when I was playing it, it was like I was just completely dead to the world. Like I'd just be there. Tapping or by phone colouring in each pixel.
So is it like an auto, you fill the shape with the colour?
Basically, yeah.
You don't like scribble on it or anything?
No. So you haven't got to like scribble and colour it in. It's like if it's number one, you click the first colour and then you just colour it in. I spent a lot of time on that. But like more actual real games. Animal Crossing, I really got a bit sort of focused into for like the first couple months I had it, and then never played it again. I literally would spend ages just wandering around my island doing nothing when I think about it, just kind of wandering around. And there
just
was
nice
days
to exist
where,
there.
Yeah. Mm. Yeah. There'd be days where I was sort of obviously during lockdown, so it was nice to be able to go outside in the game. I just wander around shaking some trees and just spending time digging things up that I just didn't really need to. That's the game I probably got the most hours into ever. And my island still looked like trash. Like, it was bad. It just had no design to it at all. It was just like, this is where I put the houses and I can't be bothered to move them. I tended to kind of just get focused on my Switch and like not talk to anyone for a couple of hours when I was playing it. Sims 4 is a bit hit or miss for me. I can sort of, sometimes I'll play it and I'll just like kind of sync my brain off. Like my brain will turn off and I'll just play it for like a couple of hours. And other times it's like, I can't, I can't focus on anything. I can't do Sims 4 because it frustrates me because it's not turning out the way I want it to. And so I just stop playing it because I get frustrated. But sometimes it's like my brain just goes straight into Sims 4 mode and it's all I can do.
I've got to build an evil church.
I simply must do it. I must build myself a big phallic church.
Oh, is that why it was evil?
Well, I mean, it had a big spire on it. It wasn't like explicitly phallic, but
just
I mean,
incidentally,
you probably,
okay.
Yeah, incidentally phallic. Yeah,
gotcha, yeah. Gotcha. Okay,
but yeah,
lovely. Nice. Ben,
yeah,
what are yours?
I've got one written down because I'm so like Leet, but spelt with two threes
and a seven.
And a seven.
And a one at the start.
And
yeah. You say 1,337.
Yeah, that's a Fergie lyric, isn't it?
I'm so 3008, you're so 1337.
I'm so glad you did it for me because I was about to fall on my face there. I don't really play mobile games anymore, but largely that's because I have an ancient phone, by which I mean this phone is only a year old, but it's an iPhone 6S.
Right.
It gets really hot when I make phone calls and it's on... Was it like battery save mode? You know, when the symbol goes yellow, I put it on that every morning when I get out of bed because I know that it will die before the day is done. Because Apple like to, you know, what's it called? Like forced obsolescence or something?
Yeah, something
or
planned obsolescence.
Yeah, they just push updates to it that kill the battery. So I buy one that's the size of a flipping house, which I really don't. That's the.
And it costs the same as a house as well.
Get on my soapbox right now, Ashton.
Okay.
I don't want a phone that's bigger than this. This is fine.
Why are they getting bigger?
Why are they getting bigger? I don't want a little plunger on the back that I have to grip onto.
I know. What are those? Yeah, I don't understand those.
What, the pop sockets?
I don't even know what they're called. Pop sockets.
They're called
that's
pop
a dance.
Sockets.
Sounds like a snack.
I love pop sockets. I think they're great because you can use them to like prop your phone up. I hold mine, but I had a pop socket, not to be, you know, that kind of person, but I had a pop socket before they were cool.
I'm sure you did, Ashton. Yeah. You are the coolest person that both Peter and I know by a long distance.
Yeah. I got sent it by a company and I was like, thanks.
Oh, that's even cooler.
Yeah, it's way cooler. Yeah.
But yeah, I prefer, like, my phone fits in my hand and that's the way I like it. Mm-hmm. That's the point. I'm going to have to get a bigger phone at some point. I've just got to make peace with that, but I'm putting it off for as long as possible. The point is I can't play games on that because it will die very, very, very fast, and it's uncomfortable to hold because it gets really hot. So the last time I actually properly played a mobile game that did suck up all my time was Game Dev Story when it first came to iOS in, I want to say, 2010, because I was at university and there was a laundry room in halls and you used to have to take all your laundry in your sack, put it in the big old oversized things, pay for the privilege because paying rent apparently doesn't get you a ticket to the laundry zone. And then I think the wash cycle went for an hour and then you could move it to the tumble dryer and it would go for an hour there as well. When I was playing Game Dev Story, I got so hooked on it that I sat in the laundry room for about 3 hours and didn't even realize that my washing was finished.
Some kid walked past and went, Game Dev Story.
Game Dev Story. And then he went back to his room and played Peggle.
It was me.
The chain of scorn is unbroken. And then Ashton sort of descends from the ceiling, like Mission Impossible style, with her pop socket.
Project Makeover.
Just goes... onto my phone and then goes back up through the ceiling. Like, get a bigger phone, you loser.
You need a pop socket to hold it because it's too hot.
Yeah. It's too flipping
hot.
Hold
it at a distance.
Yeah, so that's it. That long winded story was Game Dev Story.
Yeah, what was it?
It's like there's various different versions available. I think there's like a... I can't remember what it's called. It might be like Game Dev Tycoon. It's sort of in that style of genre, but there have since been like people have adapted the spirit of that game and been more successful, I would argue, because it turns out Game Dev Story launched in like the 90s originally.
Oh, really?
Yeah, apparently, according to Wikipedia. Oh. Not that I knew. But basically, you start up your own game development studio, you hire various members of staff, you get to name your games, you then like buy licenses for these fake consoles that sort of have names that are kind of like real consoles. Mm-hmm. And depending on how skilled your staff are, that's how well your game will be reviewed, that's how many sales you'll have. You get to decide to go to trade shows if you want and spend, you know, a portion of your budget. It's basically like a very simplified 8-bit, 16-bit art style game development game in a way. And it's, yeah, it's super fun, super addictive.
And the one you mentioned there, Game Dev Tycoon or Game Dev Sim or whatever it was called, was the one that had a piracy measure included where if you actually pirated that game, there would be a thing in the game where it would identify you'd pirated it and a thing would come up saying, lots of people are pirating our games and you've not made a lot of money on your most recent game that you just released.
Your in-game games would be pirated as a result.
Which is
brilliant. Then people will go on Reddit and like, hey, why are my games being pirated? And then they just out themselves as having pirated the game in the first place. It's great. But yeah, that was the last one I got properly hooked on that I just turned my brain off because, I don't really have that. And I can't say that I have a game like that anymore.
I think it's hard with like modern games to kind of switch your brain off to them because a lot of time they do require quite a lot of thinking.
Yeah. Or they're free to play and they're stuffed full of like cooldowns or microtransactions and stuff like that. So it's sort of, it's not quite the quote unquote pure experience that perhaps existed before those measures were commonplace.
Well, I mentioned Fruit Ninja earlier. That's a game I did also used to play a little bit on mobile, you know, the one where you slice all the fruit up. Yeah. And a couple of months ago, I went back to that just because I wanted a game to, I was like I can't have been on a public transport. I don't know. It was something where in your situation, I knew I was going to be waiting around for a while. So I was like, I'll get a mobile game. And that is full of like microtransactions and do this thing to like get credits to skip past this thing and extend your game time and stuff. You know, it used to be such a simple, wonderful, very satisfying game. And now it's just being absolutely destroyed because of its own success. And they know that it's super like monetizable.
Capitalism.
Hey,
there we are. That's the one.
Social commentary.
We did it.
Everyone.
Socialist commentary. Who do you think you are?
You guys need to calm down, quite frankly.
It's getting a bit weird, actually, isn't it?
A little bit strange. Do you smell that, Ashton? Is it a bit odd where you are?
Yeah. Is it flowing in through the window like one of those pies from movies where there's like
Big
an actual stink line.
Peculiar stink line coming in.
Weird.
Could that possibly be, Peter? Because it's
time for weird news.
Oh, she's got the papers, look.
Oh, look at her.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
A lot can happen in 3 years, like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage that lasts nearly 3 years in some states. Learn more at uh1.com.
Finding your perfect home was hard, but thanks to Burrow, furnishing it has never been easier. Burrow's easy-to-assemble modular sofas and sectionals are made from premium, durable materials, including stain and scratch-resistant fabrics. So they're not just comfortable and stylish, they're built to last. Plus, every single Burrow order ships free right to your door. Right now, get 15% off your first order at burrow.com/ACAST. That's 15% off at burrow.com/ACAST.
It's weird news time. Time for some weird video game news. Up first is Peter Austin.
It's on here. It's not too warm. It's on my phone. This is... in fact, what I'll do, maybe after I've read it and someone's reading theirs, I'll go and find out who actually posted it, because it was on our...
Yeah, I'm just realizing I haven't done that.
Yeah, it was on our weird news thread. So for now, I'll just read it and I'll give due credit in just a moment. But this is a Kotaku story. Of course it is. And it's written by Luke Plunkett. Of course it is.
Go off, Luke.
Yeah. Olympics commentator tries his best to say Gundam. That's the headline. There is a subtitle, but I don't want to read that because it'll spoil what's coming.
Okay.
The bike section of the Olympic triathlons takes a nice scenic lap around the giant Gundam statue in Odaiba City, Tokyo Plaza.
I can't see it.
Odaiba.
Yeah.
I think it's Odaiba.
Let's go with that.
Which has led commentators having to occasionally try to describe the thing. Because there's a big Gundam statue.
What is a Gundam?
It's like a mech thing.
Is it from Transformers?
Yeah, sorry, I was just asking Jen. I know what a Gundam is. I was just saying that's what they're having to do.
They're saying,
like,
what is this?
What the flip is a Gundam?
Yeah. I can't speak for other nations' commentators, but the poor chap handling the BBC's broadcast was simply doing his best, as captured here by Kiro Kiro Benito producer Gus Loben. Gus Loben.
It's all going well, isn't it?
The pronunciations
today.
Gus's tweet has been embedded. Oh, it says the media has been disabled in response to a copyright claim from the owner.
Can you not even play it?
No, I can't.
So do you know what it was?
Yeah, I remember. I watched it. But so he tweeted it with a little clip from the BBC coverage, and it's gone. I mean, the Olympics are quite protective of their own thing, so maybe the Olympics
Even say the word Olympics. You have to say the Summer Games.
Yeah, the ancient Greek sports contest.
The sports games.
Yeah,
exactly.
Does it actually say? I'll have to scroll up to that subheading that I skipped to tell you exactly what he said. As we take another look at Gundam, the unicorn robot.
Gundam.
And that's actually... God. So I have seen this clip before I read this article today. It doesn't appear to be written anywhere in here, but there was another bit. That was his second remark about it. Gundam. But the first time it was seen, he said, this here is, of course, a statue of the robot Gundam.
It's really endearing.
And well, but then he said, which I believe is something like an iconic pop culture icon here in Japan. And then he sort of paused for a bit and then said, or so I'm told. You know, he really wasn't sure.
Oh, excellent.
So the article continues. To be fair, he's not too far off. A few years back, the original Gundam statue was replaced by a new one. The new one is from Mobile Suit Gundam Unicorn.
Gundam Unicorn.
Gundam Unicorn. So the unicorn part is almost correct, it says. And then right at the bottom it says, can't help him with Gundam, though.
Gundam is brilliant.
Gundam the
Grey. That's just a willful misinterpretation of the word.
Yeah, because if you just actually read it, written down.
It's Gundam.
The vowels are the other way around.
To be fair, I did think Shinra from Final Fantasy VII was Shriner for the longest time because I misread it once and I was like, well, that's what that says. So anyway, that was from Baz, by the way, at Bazinald_ on Twitter.
Thank you, Baz.
Ashton, what you got?
Okay, so this is from Tom Monk on Twitter at T_Monk86. This is from IGN, the article written by Jared Moore. And it is, Xbox is getting an official donor in the UK. Pick up an Xbox of cream-filled snacks from August 2nd. I think it's like Xbox of cream-filled snacks.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. An official donut.
An official donor. In perhaps one of the most surreal marketing collaborations of the day, Krispy Kreme, isn't it? Or Krispy Kreme?
I don't know. I always say Krispy Kreme.
I always say Krispy Kreme.
I've heard people say that it's also apparently creme eggs is apparently.
It is actually creme eggs.
A delicious creme egg.
You mustn't.
Cadbury's have confirmed it's creme egg.
Anyway,
yeah. Krispy Kreme has announced that it will be selling a line of limited edition Xbox donuts in the UK. Krispy Kreme shared the news in a tweet that welcomed fans to the next generation before introducing fans to their new Nexus level donut, which will be coming to UK stores soon. You can check out a trailer which parodies Xbox's own hardware reveals in the tweet below. So this, I watched it earlier. It's actually really quite funny.
Is it?
Yeah, they do like a full like game reveal of being like, its sleek new sides will really fill up all of the holes or something like that, and it's really good. I fully recommend watching it if you
back at it again at Krispy Kreme.
Yeah. Back at it again.
Flip into an Xbox fridge. Amazing.
Damn straight.
I can picture it like, you know, the world's oldest hot cross bun that's on display somewhere.
Mm-hmm. No.
Have you seen this? Are you not aware of it? I'm surprised. This seems like a very Peter Austin fact to have.
I suppose it does.
There's like a quote unquote the first hot cross buns, like from the Victorian era.
That's starting to ring a bell the more you say.
And it's on like a little red velvet pillow in some display case. That is what I'm picturing some collectors doing with these Xbox branded donuts.
Putting it in like resin.
Exactly, yeah. There's just going to be this preserved donut for generations.
They should have done an Xbox hot cross bun because it's got the cross on it. It's got an X.
But if you turn it the
other
way...
Just turn it at 45 degrees.
If you turn it the other way, it's just a Phillips screwdriver.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Sorry, Ashton, carry on.
That's okay. No, I've sent you the video if, in Discord if you wanted to check that out before I carry on. Or we can do it afterwards. I'll carry on.
Go for it.
A limited line of cream-filled Xbox-branded treats will be available to purchase between August 2nd and August 22nd across its UK vendors. Fans who pick up the promotional dozen in store or by click and collect will be able to enter into a prize draw to win one of 120 Xbox Series S consoles. Upon first entry to the competition, those taking part will also receive 1 month of Xbox Game Pass Ultimate.
Oh.
Arguably, this isn't the most surprising news to link the world of food and games in 2021. Earlier this year, IGN reported on the news that McDonald's restaurants were being strongly encouraged to limit the number of Happy Meals they sold to customers across its US stores even.
Yeah.
This comes after reported surface about the scalpers were profiting from the Pokemon's 25th anniversary limited edition trading card packs that were being given out in the company's famous Happy Meals. And then it's talking about all Xbox news. And then it's like just a link to like another article. So yeah, they're bringing out a donut. It does actually look pretty cool.
Oh my God, but look at it.
I know, it doesn't look very tasty, but
my phone will explode if I.
It looks sort of furry. It's just the frosting, but like
yeah, oh, wow. The like that's powdered really cool. Sugar on it.
I like. Yeah. I am all for this, by the way. I love it when games do like sometimes it can be a bit much. Like there was a, I think there was a Halo Pizza Hut pizza at some point or something like that, and that's I feel like that's not, it's a bit cringe. I don't really want a Halo pizza, but Xbox donuts. PlayStation did a thing with Greg's at the launch of the PS5,
I got
at least two of those. They were great. They were like a little box with the PlayStation logo on it,
couple of sausage rolls
in there, and there was like a couple of donuts and a drink, and it was like a fiver. It was like the PlayStation launch day special. It was brilliant. I love those. I think they're so much fun. So we need to get some of those sent to the office when Ashton's
next. We do
need
to get some.
As soon as they're available.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Well, speaking of winning, like potentially winning Game Pass Ultimate, by the way, in our EA Play Live reactions the other week, you know, they did that competition where you had to spot the letters.
This could be your weird news.
It really could. You had to spot the letters throughout and then you had to enter the code on the website to win stuff. Worst website I've ever seen, by the way. It was really, really bad. And it wasn't what you would think, which is you land on a landing page and put in the code here. There we go. It just lists all the different prizes you could enter for. Then you have to click on it. Then you have to sign up. Then you can enter the code to see if you've done it correctly, which obviously you will because everyone posts it everywhere. Mm-hmm. And then you just get you just get entered into a competition, basically.
Yeah.
Your boy won.
He won.
Your boy won the
did
competition.
Yeah.
He did. He entered. I don't know why I'm talking in the third person. This guy entered for a month of EA Play to win a code for a month of EA Play. And I did it. I was one of 600 winners to get a code. And again, their website is really terrible. I had to scroll through every page of the winners until there were like 20 winners on each page until my name was on that page. And then I had to click a button next to my name that said claim your prize. There was no way to go straight to the prize claiming. It's absolutely unreal. Anyway, I'm not particularly impressed by the games available on EA Play currently.
No. That might be why you won. Maybe fewer people entered that one.
I just thought at some point there's got to be something I want to play on there. So I'll just redeem it for a month and play through that game and then I'll be done. Anyway, moving on. My weird news is from ShyBees at Be Shy on Twitter.
Don't be shy. Come forward.
And it's from Game Informer. Capcom is now offering Resident Evil perfumes to celebrate Leon, Jill, and Chris.
Do they smell of dead bodies?
No, they don't.
Good.
Ever looked at this? This seems to me like a Simon Miller quote.
Right.
Ever looked at Jill Valentine, Leon Kennedy, or Kenny, it says actually in this article.
If you want to get serious about
Leon Kennedy, or Kenny, if you want to miss the D out, or Chris Redfield, and thought to yourself, wow, this article's actually not very well written at all.
Oh, really?
Okay, so we've got, in the first sentence, ever looked at Jill Valentine, Leon Kenny, or Chris Redfield, and thought to yourself, self, I want to smell like those fine specimens.
That's just you talking to yourself. Hey, self.
Hey, yes, self.
Maybe. It reads really weirdly. Anyway, If the answer is yes, then boy, do we have the perfume for you. Capcom is now selling officially, that was me, licensed Resident Evil perfume. And don't worry, it doesn't smell like blood and gore like the gimmick candle the company sold a few years ago, which is horrible. For now, the perfumes are limited to just the three characters and to the Capcom Japan store. This is another thing you could import if you want to.
Region locked.
The company hasn't confirmed if the Oda Zombie Killer line will be making its way to the West, but there is hope for those that don't have a pal in Japan for the hookup. In the past, Japan-exclusive items did eventually make their way to a global release. That, and eventually the line will make its way to Amazon Japan, which will usually ship internationally. It continues to go on about how the scents smell. The description states that the perfumes were inspired by the characters, but doesn't reveal how. What are the notes? Floral, musky, fruity? Do they smell like murder and rampage? Or do they smell like the frustration we felt in Village when we were yelling at Chris, this could have been an email? No matter, they're nifty collector's items at worst. So there we are.
The Jill one probably smells of sandwich.
Yeah, oh God, a good sandwich.
Yeah.
Delicious.
Or Master of Unlocking, potentially.
What does that smell like, do you think? Just sort of WD-40?
Yeah, probably just sort of iron filings.
Yeah.
Delicious. There we are. That was weird news. Peter.
Yes. Let's have a question three. It's from David Lever, who says, hello, Ben, Peter, and Ashton.
Hello.
And then in parentheses, it says, big welcomes, by the
way. Big welcomes.
So, thanks, man.
Yeah. I've been playing the Skyward Sword remaster, and I'm going to say it. I don't care that you broke your elbow, and motion controls aren't that bad. Whoa. Maybe a little finicky, occasionally annoying, but I think they can give a more tailored experience or make a good addition to non-motion games, e.g. motion-based aiming. Mm-hmm. What do you think? And have you had any particularly good or bad motion control experiences? I once didn't wear the wrist strap and Wiimoted my sister in the head. Oops. Keep up the good work, David.
Oops, all concussions.
Thank you, David.
Thanks, David. Thanks, Arthur.
Did you ever get that, like, when you got a Wii, you'll be like, one woman didn't wear the strap and the remote went straight into her TV and the TV was broken, so you have to wear your Wii remote strap thing.
Yeah.
There is so like much footage online of TVs getting mashed by Wiimotes. I don't know how you... I mean, David nearly knocked his sister out. But
yeah.
I can't say I've ever had any like near misses with a Wiimote personally.
No.
But I did usually wear the strap.
Mm. Well, so, maybe that's it. You know,
better safe than sorry. Yeah.
Clunk click every trip.
What? Is that a seatbelt PSA?
From about the 1970s.
Oh, for God's sake. Why do you know that?
I don't know. I simply do not know. It doesn't even rhyme. Clunk click every trick.
Every trick.
Every trick.
Anyway, motion controls. I have always looked at the motion controlled version of Resident Evil 4.
Yes, that's meant to be really good.
That actually looks quite handy. Because if there's one thing about Resi 4 on PS2 or whatever it is that you played it on, it's a bit sort of slow to aim. I mean, I know you don't like other aspects of the controls either, but even just, I mean, I don't mind it. I'm used to it, but it's just a bit, you know, you kind of, although you can move at more than two axes, I kind of feel like I did a lot of up and down and left and right rather than, you know, other directions. And it's kind of slow and stuff. It's better. It's a bit like how people are a bit elitist about playing FPSs on a PC, because if you are able to use a mouse and keyboard on an FPS and you learn how to do it, you know, with a mouse, you can very quickly just go from point A to point B as quick as you can just move your hand and your mouse sensitivity. Whereas with a controller, it's all down to your thumb. It's a different thing entirely. So I think that looks good, but I can't say I've played it. I mean, my main experiences with motion controls, if you can call it that, is more with like VR stuff and Kinect. I've never owned a Wii. I've like played on other people's Wiis at their houses. But you know, I've had such little time with the Nintendo Wii that for the most part it's sort of worked as intended, really. But Star Wars Kinect is one.
that works well.
I've played more than just the dancing on that game. There's like a Rancor Rampage level where you go around and smash up Mos Eisley. And that's kind of rubbish. It doesn't really work well at all. That's the Kinect for you. But also, we played that Planet of the Apes game.
Oh, God. Yeah. Vidiot, was that on the 5?
It was on...
It was on some kind of it was a PC.
Oculus.
Or, it might have been Oculus, yeah.
It might have been the Vive. I don't know what it was, but yeah, it was a PC game. It was a VR Planet of the Apes first person game where you played as an ape, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. You were they were really cross about something, those apes.
They were. They're mad. They blew it up, the maniacs.
Flipping mad.
And to move around, because you were an ape, you had to like do this. Well, for those not watching on YouTube, you had to.
And for Ashton.
You had to swing your arms like you were doing kind of, you know, those people who do power walking as a sport.
Yeah. Yeah.
Or like someone on the Amarillo music video for British viewers and listeners. But we soon discovered that, how can I put this delicately, that a way to really rapidly move around the room
is to grate carrots.
Is to grate carrots with a manual grater. So you do a lot of wrist action, you know, very, very fast grating. It would go everywhere, all the carrot peelings all over the place. But you would zoom across because it thinks you're swinging your arms super fast.
Yeah. They didn't like that, did they? Because it was a brand deal. They told us not to do that.
They said, can you cut around
the bit where you're just
tossed yourself off around the area.
But it worked so effectively because you just went vroom.
Yeah. Yeah.
So stupid. Yeah, that wasn't great. That wasn't a great game, admittedly.
It wasn't. Ashton, do you have any motion control experience?
So the Switch games, obviously a couple of them used motion controls more than other ones. Mm. Mario Odyssey uses motion controls quite a lot for like certain, you have to basically play it rather than on a controller, like holding the two switchy bits.
Do they have Joy-Cons?
Joy-Con.
The switchy bits.
And like, you have to do certain movements to get Mario and the hat to do certain things.
Cappy, but Ashton, please.
Cappy,
not Hattie.
what did you say?
Cappy. His name's Cappy, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah. I didn't hear what you were saying.
He should be called Hattie, though. That's an actual name.
That would make way more sense.
Yeah.
Yeah. Sorry, Mario and Cappy. Poor Mario. And you have to, like, swing it in certain directions, which can be good sometimes, but sometimes just kind of, like, swimming your arms around in various ways. It just does random things, which tend to be fine. But I don't know if it counts as technically as motion controls, but I'm going to say it anyway. The fitness adventure that the Switch came out with years back, which is like the whole keep fit thing. It was basically a bit like the Wii Fit, but it had like a big ring.
Yeah, that's the ring one. Yeah,
you stuck. Oh, it's called Ring Fit Adventure.
Ring Fit. Yeah, I was going to say it's called Ring Fit, isn't it?
Yeah, you stick the Joy-Con on the board and then also on your leg. And I played a little bit of that over lockdown. I was like, I'm going to get fit, then didn't play anymore. But I actually thought that worked really well for what it was. And to be honest, it did get you moving quite a lot. Because you have to, because if you don't move enough, it just tells you you're not moving enough and you just can't do anything. Right. So yeah, I think that was a really good use of motion controls. And kind of something that maybe you wouldn't necessarily think of as well in terms of like actual motion controls, because you know, your Joy-Con is stuck in a big ring, but you still have to move it around a lot. In terms of VR, though, we mentioned the Star Wars game that you didn't like. There's a Star Wars game in VR that is really good for motion controls, like fully like lightsaber.
Is it Vader Immortal?
Vader Immortal.
Yeah, yeah, but the lightsaber dojo. It's so good.
I want to play it, but I don't have the technology.
Well, when I eventually move up, we can use the Oculus and we'll get you in to do some lightsaber dojo.
You're going to be
fighting
Vader.
I am.
Yeah. That's really good. So
it looks good, yeah.
If you're looking for a Star Wars game that has kind of lightsaber motion controls, I highly recommend the VR one.
Fantastic.
So, yeah.
Amazing. You played Half-Life Alyx as well, right?
I did. Yeah, that's really good. And it's really responsive motion control wise. I played it sort of on like jumping movement rather than fluid movement because that made me feel a bit sickums. So the movements with like the gun controls and everything is really good in Half-Life Alyx as well. I think VR at the moment for that kind of game is really, really good because it has to be, because if it's not responsive, you're not gonna be able to play it. But yeah, I think a lot of the games you feel really immersed into it because you have to do these full movements to like play the game. So I think at the moment VR is really kind of finding its feet with a lot of the motion controls to make it a lot more realistic for players. So yeah, I think the Switch and also VR are getting quite good at finding their old feet with their motion controls, which is just kind of exciting.
Yeah, Resi 7 was a bit funny for motion controls because you could either try and navigate, you could do it fluidly by looking around, but you could also turn your character in like sort of 15 degree notches by flicking like the sticks or something, and it was kind of strange. You know, that's where it falls down, I think, to some extent, when there's like a very expansive level to explore that is going to go beyond the limits of your play space. But there's only so much they can do about that, so you know, you have to applaud them for trying to deal with that kind of thing and still presenting those games in VR, you know.
Ben,
Mission Controls.
Worst one I've ever played, Hulk Hogan's main event for the Kinect. Doesn't work. Just does not work.
Some one of the most games ever.
Frustrating. Yeah, an older episode of Worst Games Ever when we were at Vidiots. One of the most frustrating games I've ever played because it's simply that you had way more success than I did. Mm. You were dabbing, weren't you, to pin them in the end?
I don't remember that.
Because it just would not register the movements on screen. It would not do it. So that was terrible. Obviously, a lot of people have either played a Wii or had a Wii. You did say earlier you went to other people's houses to have a go at the Wii. And I thought, was that before or after you did a pool?
I'm going to play a Wii at Paul's.
So I had a Wii. Wii Sports, obviously, everybody loves that. That game's a bit hit and miss, literally, in some cases, with some of those games. Golf, in particular, is like how anyone could be good at Wii Golf. I will never understand, because you go very gently, and it doesn't register that you've even moved it. You go a little bit faster and it goes and like the power thing goes up and out of the bar and goes red and goes and it just flies off into the trees. So that didn't work great. But hello, it's me, the one guy who bought a PS3 at launch and had it for the duration of that generation. The PlayStation Move was not good in the respect that it didn't have any killer software, but in terms of its accuracy, it was actually really impressive. Like the one-to-one tracking was really, really good. And obviously that's why it ended up being the main controls for PlayStation VR when that came out, because the technology was fantastic. It just didn't make any good stuff for it.
Do you not like riding dragons in slightly low quality?
No, that was just the six axis in the controller, which was it. Oh. That's another one that was not good.
Did they not all? So was that only allowed for six axis?
Yeah, that was a launch game, The Move wasn't out then. But God, if they patched Lair to support PlayStation Move, that would have been a very confusing decision.
I assumed that it was all. That you could maybe late down the line that you could maybe use Move as well.
The six axis was rubbish as well, to be clear. Like the only games that used it sort of well were Uncharted Drake's Fortune, where you could have it so that you could tilt it back towards you when aiming a grenade and it would change the arc of the grenade. That felt kind of good to do, because you didn't have to like look at the sky to throw a grenade or whatever. Then there was also Flower, which was a fantastic game from that game company.
Pretty game.
Yeah, which was also still quite hard to control with the six axis. It wasn't hugely accurate. But moving on to VR, as we've all ended up talking about, I was really impressed with Farpoint, which we talked about when we were at What Culture, because it was one of the games that supported the AIM controller, which was released by Sony, which is a gun, which in America is, I think, gun-colored. And in the rest of the world, it's like, I think, white, because they can't they can't release it. Can't make it look like a gun.
Even though it doesn't really look much like a gun.
It's got a giant ping pong ball on the end of it. It's clearly not a gun.
Like a coat
hanger. I know.
I was really impressed with it. Like, it just felt right, and the tracking was absolutely perfect. When you look down at the gun, like whatever gun you were holding, you would tilt this real analog of it, and it would rotate exactly the way that you were looking. I was really impressed by that. The future is very bright, as Ashton was pointing out, for motion controlled games. I don't want it in every game. It has to be contextual and make sense, and it can't be like, here's the new Battlefield, you can play it with Move controllers if you've got them. It's like, No, don't do that. Yeah. Just release bespoke games for it. Like that's kind of what you need to do.
What do you guys think of the, because obviously in the new PlayStation 5 controllers there is they're a bit more motion control into it, because Astrobot used quite a lot of,
I was thinking about Astrobot while Ben was talking about his answer. Yeah.
Somebody did ask a question about Astrobot as well, talking about the controller, so there we go.
Yeah.
I mean, I think it works pretty well. To me, like the thing that I most took away from the DualSense controller, and particularly playing Astrobot, was more the adapter triggers. I get more out of that, and the way the speaker works, and it kind of has almost a stereo sense to it. Like you can hear things coming out of different parts of the controller, the way that they seem to mix it. It's very well, like you get little bits of rain falling down and stuff. Those kind of things I enjoy more than the motion controls, but it works well enough, I think, for simple games like
the games that actually the vibration is my favorite thing that it does, even though sometimes it makes my hands go all pins and needly. Like the feeling the vibration move around the controller is really impressive. But what do you make of it, Ashton?
I quite like to see it in an actual proper game that isn't just Astro's. But haven't really got any PlayStation 5 exclusives that have kind of left room for it. Yeah, I don't know how they'll use it, but it is kind of interesting that it is kind of something they were like, we've done this, isn't this great? And then we're kind of waiting to see it actually be used.
Yeah, it's sort of very subtly.
Yeah, it's very subtly included in a lot of games.
Because obviously the triggers, when we were playing Plague's Tale last week, I don't know if you noticed this as well, when you are like, sprinting or going faster, you can feel the footsteps on your trigger, and that was, I found that quite really interesting. But yeah, I'm interested to see if the motion controls will actually kind of come into games on a kind of larger scale, or if they'll just kind of forget about it. But yeah, that's what I was wondering about, the motion controls and the PlayStation 5 thing.
I think subtle, unless it's VR where you have to have motion controls, or a console that's built around motion controls like the Wii. I think sort of subtle inclusion.
It'll be for like balancing on beams and things like that.
That stuff I don't mind. As long as everyone has the option to turn it off, then, you know, that's fine. As long as it's not mandatory.
Yeah.
Because I think it really does add to the experience, but not everyone likes it. So.
Yeah, no. And it's probably not accessible for some people.
Yeah, absolutely.
Maybe they're able to sit and use a controller just in a more static position. But if it comes to start, you know, you have to start moving your wrists and your arms around, it's not going to be okay for everyone. So. Yeah. Yeah, the option to turn it off is always a good thing.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's time to move on to a rather large discussion.
Mm.
And I would say that it's called the big discussion.
Big discussion.
It's big discussion time. Time for the big discussion. The big discussion this week comes from X Patrick, who says, "Hi guys, what do you make of the situation at Activision and Blizzard that's come out over the past week?" So I'm sure a lot of people will be aware of the heinous and disgusting details of the sort of so-called frat boy culture that has come to light about Activision Blizzard. And we're going to read you a little bit here, Peter and I, from a couple of Eurogamer articles. If you want specifics about the nasty stuff that's gone on, you can find them. But this is more sort of the most recent updates at the time of recording.
And needless to say, if it's something that you don't think you really want to hear, you know, it's worth keeping in mind. That's what we're going to be talking about now for the next few minutes.
Absolutely. Yeah. So, yes, these two excerpts here are from Eurogamer. They'll be linked in the description if you want to read more. Activision Blizzard employees are planning a walkout tomorrow, so this was earlier this week, the 28th of July, in protest against the company's response to a recent lawsuit from California's Department of Fair Employment and Housing alleging a frat boy work culture that created a breeding ground for harassment and discrimination against women. Activision was quick to slam the lawsuit, strongly denying its claims and dismissing it as irresponsible behavior from unaccountable state bureaucrats that are driving many of the state's best businesses out of California. That was a stance repeated in an email reportedly disseminated by Activision Blizzard executive Fran Townsend, who insisted the lawsuit presented a distorted and untrue picture of our company, including factually incorrect, old, and out-of-context stories. Townsend continued,
Rest assured that leadership is committed to continuing to maintain a safe, fair, and inclusive workplace. We cannot let egregious actions of others and a truly meritless and irresponsible lawsuit damage our culture of respect and equal opportunity for all employees. Many Activision Blizzard employees were quick to criticize Townshead's statement, and more than 2,000 current and former employees have now signed a petition describing the company's response to the recent discrimination lawsuit abhorrent and insulting. It also called for Townshead to resign her position as executive sponsor of the company's employee women's network, and for official statements that recognize the seriousness of these allegations and demonstrate compassion for victims of harassment and assault.
Mm-hmm. And on that last point, there has now been a more recent statement. So there's an update also written up by Eurogamer, who say Activision Blizzard boss Bobby Kotick has told staff that the company's initial response to the recently filed discrimination lawsuit was, quote, tone deaf. This is also a quote. Our initial responses to the issues we faced together and to your concerns were, quite frankly, tone deaf, Coates said in an open letter to the community, to the company staff that was made public last night. It is imperative that we acknowledge all perspectives and experiences and respect the feelings of those who have been mistreated in any way. I am sorry that we did not provide the right empathy and understanding. It just goes from bad to worse, doesn't it? That, like, not only does this happen in the first place, which, of course, is the worst part of this story, but to then come out and go, well, you know, it's old stuff and it's out of context and, you know, we're being victimized here.
Like, yeah.
You know, that just makes it 100 times worse. So, I mean, you know, to have acknowledged that now and said that was the wrong response is something, but not enough.
Absolutely more needs to be done, and we will continue to cover this as and when it's relevant. If you know, if people want updates, you can ask questions as and when there's more news. But we are now going to sort of hand the floor over to Ashton, really, to speak her mind on this, because she, I mean, as we discussed before the podcast, that, you know, all Peter and I can do is really condemn it, but we just lack the perspective to
really seem right for us to
exactly say too our much opinion on this is not relevant
other than to condemn it as you say
so Ashton, whatever it is that that you would like to say about it, please go ahead.
I think you kind of hit the nail on the head with the fact that obviously the actions themselves are completely disgusting, but the fact that the statement that came out regarding it just makes it, I think, so much worse. I'll be honest, I'm just kind of tired of hearing about things like this. Not because I think it shouldn't be reported, and not because I think people shouldn't come forward, just because I just don't think it should be happening anymore. Which is kind of like a really obvious statement of, like, this should not continue to be happening to marginalized communities. Because it's not just against women, it's against, you know, people who are not white, people who are not straight. Trans people face a lot of issues within the gaming industry. And I think the issue with these big companies not condemning it and not saying, okay, yeah, we know that this is a bad thing and we are aiming to fix it, we do not accept this is happening in our business and it shouldn't happen outside of it, what that does is it trickles down to a lot of different facets in gaming in general. I mean, I've spoken about it on Twitter a little bit about my experience in esports, being hired for shows where it's mainly me, and maybe maximum on any of the big shows I worked was like 6 women to about 50 to 80 to 100 men, which obviously it's a great opportunity that we are even getting a like seat kind of at the table per se. But with that, there was a lot of times that I was harassed or people said things to me that made me uncomfortable. But because I was kind of just trying to continue to get work and get my foot in the door in the industry, I was like, well, I don't want to say anything. I'm just going to laugh it off and go along with it. Occasionally things happen that, you know, I was kissed without my consent, even though I was in a relationship at the time. I was told, if you weren't in a relationship, I would sleep with you, as if I had a choice in the matter by the sound of things. People would just make comments, they'd kind of hit on me or make me feel uncomfortable, but it's like you can't really say anything because you want to continue to get work. But it trickles down, I think, a lot further than that, and the fact that that's obviously one way of looking at it in terms of my personal experience. But when you look at the greater, like, grand scheme of things, you've got women won't, or I say women, and I'm kind of in covering a catch-all here of sort of cis women, non-binary people and trans folk. But, you know, women won't turn on their microphones in games like League or Overwatch or CSGO because they know that even though those games require you to have your microphone on, if the minute they turn their microphone on, you're either going to get one of two responses. And this isn't always, but this is kind of the general feeling, I think, for a lot of girl gamers, of you either get sexually harassed and made to feel uncomfortable, or you get harassed and generally made to feel like you are not welcome in the space. Mm-hmm. And when you've got such a big company saying that it's all incorrect, it's all, you know, it's all just said essentially a load of rubbish, that doesn't then help the situation for the regular gamer or the regular woman in the industry to feel like they're welcome in a space, or to feel like that people, the men, should be held accountable for it. And it also doesn't help men realize what they're doing is wrong. And again, I'm not saying, again, not all men, but those of you that don't think it's you, it probably isn't you, but it might be your friends. You might be in a lobby with a bunch of guys that are making a young woman feel uncomfortable and just letting them do it. I know it's not easy to speak out, but just being someone to just say no or say to stop it is one thing that I think most women would appreciate. But yeah, like I say, it's just disappointing. It's not surprising. I'm not shocked. I'm disappointed. And I know that people are doing a lot more in this situation than possibly with the Ubisoft situation and just sort of in general. I just worry that nothing's going to change because nothing changed after the Ubisoft situation. Mm. Clearly nothing changed. I mean, we were basically in practically the same situation, but at least Ubisoft kind of owned up to it a little bit. I just think that I'm trying to be positive about it and like think that the best will come of the situation, the walkout will make a difference, but I'm kind of so cynical about the whole situation where I'm like, it doesn't matter what we do because these things happen behind closed doors, and even when they happen out in the open or they happen publicly like this situation, nobody cares. This is like an executive, she doesn't care that people in her company have felt uncomfortable. And I'm trying not to get like amped up about it too much, but I just think that unless you're going to own up to it and try and fix it at the top end, you can't expect people, the average Joe, to learn anything from it and it to gradually trickle down. I mean, in this job, like, obviously you guys are great and no one in the office made me feel uncomfortable, but things like being called a diversity hire and comments about my looks and stuff. Obviously, I'm not saying that it's bad to comment about the way I look, but that wasn't the reason I was hired. I just look like this and I appreciate the comments, but I don't think that that's all that's about me that's important.
Exactly. It's really reductive to say that you were hired either for your gender or your appearance. Or
a man wouldn't get those comments.
Exactly, a man wouldn't get those comments. And, you know, perhaps those people need to think, oh, well, actually, there was an application process and you probably had to submit, you know, a showreel showing that, can you actually do the job? Maybe that's possibly the reason that you were hired. I don't know, just putting that out there. But to go back to what you were saying earlier, like, you're right that, you know, in a way, I don't think people are shocked. They're still appalled, but not shocked and appalled because it's happened before and it continues to happen. Mm-hmm. And number one, you're right that it's about setting an example to either your own members of staff, if you're an executive in one of these companies, or to the gaming sphere as a whole. So the people that, you know, you might play League of Legends with, you know, just average gamers. But also, you're right that, you know, this has happened at Ubisoft, for example. And you would think that even if this stuff had been going on at Activision Blizzard.
And Quantic Dream, actually. And,
well, yeah, in various places. But Ubisoft's one, you know, quite a big one in recent memory. But, you know, if this behavior had been happening, Activision Blizzard, you'd think that they might see what had happened to another company and think, okay, we need to, like, book our ideas up and make sure there's none of that happening here. It should never have been happening in the first place. Obviously, that goes without saying. But you'd think that'd be a wake-up call for you to go, right, maybe we should check our own practices and see what's happening here. Because, and again, we're not going to go into like the full details of what happened. But one thing that really, like, sort of disturbed me this morning is that one of the quote-unquote games that was played in the one of these offices, or perhaps multiple offices, had a name, which implies that it happens often enough for people to say, oh yeah, let's play Cube Crawl again. You know, we're going to do another Cube Crawl tomorrow. Like, the fact that it's got a name that's accepted by the members of staff is really disturbing, you know?
Yeah.
But you'd think that by now, if these things are happening behind closed doors, that companies would be bucking their ideas up before it comes out that we've been doing it too, and seemingly not at the moment. So, yeah.
Absolutely.
Very troubling.
Yeah.
It's upsetting to hear about, and clearly it's as you said, Ashton, it may well be, you know, it's an overplayed cliche, the sort of hashtag not all men, but all men can do something about it, even if you're not, again, as Ashton said, even if you're not personally partaking in the, you know, these horrible practices, there's a good chance you will see them or witness them or hear them talked about. And that is an opportunity to step in. And again, going back to what Ashton said, it's not always easy. It could be deeply uncomfortable and unpleasant to get involved. But just think how much worse it is for the person on the receiving end of that, potentially. Mm-hmm. Hashtag all men do need to step up.
Yeah.
And everybody needs to do and be better. And, you know, I'm so sorry about the stuff that you went through, Ashton, because that's absolutely despicable. And there's just no place for it. There is no place for it in any workplace.
Mm-hmm.
And it is so depressing that it continues to be a part of game development or just gaming in general, which has always been something of a boys' club. And things, you know, anecdotally, until recent revelations, you might think, well, maybe things have been improving as more women are getting into gaming, but clearly that's not the case. And clearly we still have a very long way to go, and that's awful.
Mm-hmm.
But everybody just needs to step up.
Yeah.
And if that means, like, you know, sharing things from yesterday, the walkout that happened yesterday at time of recording, you know, it's sharing things, it's just being aware that these things happening. There's always like links and stuff to find out more information and see what else you can do. Some of that is donating, but if you can't donate to these resources that help this not happen, then just sharing it and making sure, you know, people in your sphere might know about it. Or even, you know, like Ben was saying, stepping in. Because I imagine in the offices in Activision Blizzard, there was a bunch of people who thought, this is not okay, and I'm not okay with this, but I'm too scared to stand up. And that is totally fine. But because it can be scary. If you've got a bunch of guys that are feeling one way and you know that you're just one person against them, I don't imagine it is just the one person that's in that room that feels uncomfortable, but it can be difficult to speak out about it. And I'm not saying put yourself in any kind of risk into doing that, but even if it's just finding someone you can talk to or finding a way to make sure that the person on the receiving end knows that you're there to support them and you're trying to help them, then that is enough. And you might get called a simp, you might get called names, but at the end of the day, the person that you are helping out probably thinks of you as a decent person, and that's all that really matters, to be honest.
And again, as Ben said, I would rather someone called me a simp or an SJW or whatever, and know that I've said or done the right thing in a situation that I found uncomfortable, rather than kept quiet. And, you know, if the worst thing that happens to me is someone calls me a simp versus, you know, another member of staff gets groped or whatever it is, you know, it's a small price to pay, really.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have anything more you want to add, Ashton, before we wrap up?
No, I don't think so. Just be better, games industry. I've told you before, and I'll tell you again, be better.
It's always the same suspects, isn't it? Yeah. Why is there, whenever there's trouble, it's always you, games industry and wrestling.
Games and wrestling.
Yeah. Always you too. Well, there we are. If, of course, you're affected by anything we've spoken about, I do implore you to check out the relevant articles. I will make sure that in the upload for this, we have links to relevant places if you do want some assistance with some of the topics that we've spoken about. But, of course, please keep the discourse, as I assume you will, as the lovely Triple Jump viewing community and listening community, keep the discourse in the comments non-toxic.
Mm-hmm.
And Peter is going to begin telling you where you can find us around the internet.
Yes, our content goes out on YouTube and Twitch. That's both videos and streams. YouTube.com and twitch.tv/TeamTripleJump. When we're streaming on either of those channels, we're modded by Lord Brotovich, Trowling Badger, and Mr. Black. If you've got Amazon Prime, one of the benefits of that is that you get a Twitch sub with that at no extra cost. So consider that spending that on us. We get the usual financial benefit from that. And everyone's a winner, really. We've got social media, twitter.com and facebook.com/TeamTripleJump. Generally, our sort of video and live stream announcements and things like that go out on Twitter. And over on Facebook, we're uploading sort of old clips and little things like that. So you can check out video content over there. Fraser and Luke Eldon are looking after Facebook, and Fraser also manages Twitter for us as well. Thank you, Fraser. And finally from me, patreon.com/TeamTripleJump is where you can go to have a look at our Patreon and the various rewards therein.
And I've got a bit of the outro now, so I'm going to tell you about the website. We have a website, it's triplejet.mup, which is ju.mp if you were confused. If you want to get to Discord, it's triplejet.mup/Discord. Thank you to the mods, Jack, Joe, and Hollow Eyes. I think
that's
right.
Nailed it.
So, if you want to listen to the podcast, obviously you might find it on YouTube, but if you want to listen to it on your phone or in your headphones when you're walking about, you can go to triplejet.mer/podcast. All of our live stream VODs are on triplejet.mer/VODs. And if you want to get some sick merch, some tasty merch, you can go to triplejumpshop.com, and you can also follow us on Twitter at triplejumpshop that has all of the latest merch droppage. On there.
Certainly does. We are awaiting merch samples in the office currently, so we're nearly there, guys. We've said it every week for months. We are. I promise. We're closing.
They're actually coming to the office physically.
They are.
Now.
We're going to see it. We're going to tick a box, and then it will go live on the website. Hopefully, so there we are.
Yeah.
You can follow. It is exciting. You can follow Peter and Ashton on Instagram and Twitter at ThatPeterAustin and at ScrambledAshton, and myself just on Twitter at Confused_Dude. We do lists every Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday, streams every Monday, Tuesday, Thursday, Friday, I suppose I can say, because James Jenkins did his first solo stream this week.
Wow.
And Ashton may well do her first solo stream next week. So
maybe
it'll be Monday through Friday. There'll be streams the whole week. The full schedule is on our Twitch, twitch.tv/TeamTripleJump. But Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Friday will be the solo streams on Twitch. Thursday is the joint stream, Blaze It on YouTube. Worst Games Ever is fortnightly, Friday for patrons of a certain tier, Sunday for everybody else. The podcast is every Saturday, and we do shows once every other week or thereabouts. Why not leave a review on iTunes or your platform of choice? This week, beyond obviously triplejump.gg, where you get all your amazing digital currencies if you want them. We have a What It Means to Me from our very own Ashton Matthews.
Oh my God, who?
Portal 1 and 2.
Oh, yeah.
Wow.
So that's out right now, and you can go and watch Ashton talk all about Portal, which is a phenomenal series. Mm. And what a lovely video, too. Finally, we wrap up. I've got so many papers.
I didn't bring my sheet number three.
Your last sheet. Yeah, the final piece of paper is just today's sponsor, and that's it. So that's
we will recycle it.
Yes.
Well, yes.
Reuse it.
Yes. Today's sponsor is, of course, Persona Sticks. Now even dogs can get them fun or something. Anyway, that's the sponsor.
I'm sure they will.
Thank you so much for watching/listening, everybody. We'll be back next week. Until then, enjoy the rest of your weekend. Goodbye.
Bye-bye.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.